Great news. I'm on the road having a groovy time with these lights. This weekend, I'm going to be in Key West, Florida. In May, I'm going to be in Los Angeles. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. June, I'm going to be in Salt Lake City in Cleveland. I don't know why I said Salt Lake City. Why am I rushing? This is my podcast. I can go as slow as I want. Hey, in July, I got Montreal. I got Toronto. I got Ottawa. JimNorton.com/tour.
So, Jim, you didn't mention my book.
I am a terrible host. What is the name of your book, Neil?
Merlin's Tour of the Universe.
And where can people get that?
At bookstores near you or just online, obviously. Yeah. Or if you get it from my museum's web portal, then all the books that they sell, I've pre-signed.
Now, you
have a fancy pen.
You're seeing this. This is the end of the podcast, but I'm actually putting this part in the beginning. So now watch the podcast, because I forgot to mention the book. Why? Because I'm stupid. Welcome to another episode of Jim Norton Can't Save You. My friend, I'm going to call you my friend. Colleague might not be right. I don't know if you'd object to colleague.
Well, no, I too go out on two platforms by this mode. So we are media colleagues.
Okay, that's not what I was hoping for, but I'll accept media colleagues.
We'll give you that. Well, I'm good.
We have a lot to cover
today. So we're live now on Instagram?
We are live for a few minutes on Instagram. Just to let people know to call in, it's 720-820-1337. If you have...
That's old school, people calling in?
That's why I like it.
Wow.
I like that because it lets people... It's an advice show, but this, because it's you, they may want to ask life advice or they may want to ask questions about science.
I have some advice for like how I got here, but not general advice.
I'm imagining science too with you. It's very rare I get somebody. You know, it's funny. I was thinking on the way in, like, I've interviewed a lot of people. You're one of the smartest people I've talked to, without a doubt. I mean, like Michio Kaku, yourself, Brian Cox, like in that, you know.
In the genre, yeah.
Who would you say is the smartest person you've ever spoken to?
I don't go around thinking like that.
No?
I don't rank people by how smart they are.
No, but I mean, if the guy whose brain, when you talk to him, you're like, I love the way that guy thinks. And don't feel obligated. I mean.
Okay. All right. In that context, there are a few mathematicians I know who, when you're just hanging out with them, they'll observe something and think about it in a way you never thought to think about it. And I greatly value people who see things the way no one else has seen them. Or maybe that's how you might define genius. Genius is seeing what everyone else has seen, but thinking what no one else has thought.
Like James Gates, I wanted to ask you about. Is that his name, James Gates?
Sylvester James Gates.
Yeah. Really interesting clips. People talk about simulation and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he has this thing where he said that he found something like in supersymmetry and string theory,
which is his specialty. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like I know what those things are, but those two guys don't. Could you explain that just for these two?
Well, so we have Einstein's general theory of relativity, which is the account of all things large scale in the universe. In fact, it gives us our understanding of the Big Bang itself. And then we have quantum physics. Right now, we're in the centennial decade of the discovery of most of the tenets of quantum physics, the 1920s. Benchmark decade for quantum. All right. Quantum physics is the physics of the small, the molecule, the atom, the nucleus. And it turns out when the universe began in the Big Bang, the large was small. So you have to ask, does quantum physics rule the large-scale universe when the large-scale universe is on the scale of quantum physics? It turns out quantum physics and general relativity do not make nice in that sandbox. They cannot be reconciled.
Right.
At all. They work in their realms, but you cannot reconcile them. And so string theorists come along and say maybe there's a higher level understanding that both of these plug into.
Is that what the theory of everything means?
That would get you a theory of everything. And so general relativity, it accounts for black holes, but at the center of a black hole, the singularity, that's where all the equations fail. If you want to be more poetic, you say that that's where God divides by zero. Remember, you're not supposed to divide by zero?
Right.
Remember that? You try that on your calculator. You know, it doesn't work.
No.
Right. For good mathematical reasons. So general relativity cannot take you to that limit. That understanding, that formulation of our understanding of the universe fails in that realm. So who can save us? It would be string theorists. And they've been around for many decades trying to figure this out, trying to give us a theory of everything, a TOA.
Right. And then, so you have, and I know guys, they're saying these little vibrating strings, but then...
Yeah, so the idea is that there are no particles in the universe. You have these strings of energy, one-dimensional, nearly one-dimensional, they look one-dimensional to us, that vibrate. And what's fundamental in the universe is not the subatomic particles, the fundamental particles. No, what's fundamental is a vibrating string of energy. And if you ping it at different frequencies, it will reveal itself as different particles to us. And so it's a more fundamental understanding of what's going on, if it's true.
And S. James Gates said that when, like, looking into this, he found certain things that matched up with computer code or that he thought was computer code. How is that? Because I saw you interview him, and you seemed kind of amazed that
Yeah. Well, I had him on stage. I annually, at my home institution, the American Museum of Natural History, I host a annual panel debate in honor of Isaac Asimov, the Asimov annual Isaac Asimov panel debate. And it's not a debate like a political debate, point, counterpoint, you know, rebuttal. No, it's not that formal. It's just, let's just talk about something that in science we don't yet agree on.
Right.
That's all. So debate oversells it. It's a conversation about really cool stuff on the frontier, and people have competing ideas. And so in that, he was describing that some of the equations he was working on were revealing to him certain features that you would find as the handiwork of a programmer.
Really?
And that's when I freaked out, and I said, what? I was like, what? Like, what are you saying? Right? And so, yeah, this is what I don't know it's been verified by others or if he's continues to think that. I haven't followed up on it since then.
But he's obviously a guy, and we're going to go to the phone so we can cut that. Thank you for watching. Call in if you want to ask a question.
Yeah. Call in on anything. Right. I mean, yes. And try not to call in with a question that you could just look up on a wiki page. Because that's a waste of our time together. Just wiki, just look it up.
Yeah.
Ask questions that are a little more subtle, a little more intriguing.
How far is the sun? Look that up. Look that up.
Yeah, look that one up. All right.
But I was interested in your take on this guy, because some people said, no, it's not true. And then, because when you think of, like, Interstellar, right, where they talk about...
The film, Interstellar.
Yes. Everything, endless possibilities. We could be having this conversation in another dimension, another realm. It doesn't make sense to me that's just not feasible.
Wait. The universe,
yes,
is under no obligation to make sense to you.
That is true. I mean, I can't figure my wife out, much less the universe.
Put that out.
But it does make sense in the context of maybe some type of a computer thing. And I'm not a big we live in a simulation guy, but endless possibilities in some type of a computer makes a lot more sense than endless physical possibilities of you and I having this conversation in another planet somewhere.
So I think the opposite of that.
You do?
Yeah. So
two colleagues disagree.
Aha. So do you remember the Truman Show?
I didn't see it, but
you
I
didn't
remember
see it.
Never
Ooh.
Saw it, no.
Ooh. I mean, it's an important movie just because of where it goes.
Right.
More than because it's well acted or well directed or produced.
So you liked it?
I thought it was... If there are occasions to reference it later, then you should see the movie.
Right.
It's like Groundhog Day, right? That's become, it's entered our culture.
Yes.
As a repeating time loop where you get to make a little adjustment each time.
Yes.
And that's not a statement about whether the movie was good or bad or how the acting was. It was just, it addressed themes that are worthy of working its way into our culture. All right. So in... what was that? Which movie did I just mention?
You were talking about, we said Interstellar, then
Truman
we said
Groundhog
Day. Thank you.
Thank you. So if somebody's paying attention.
I mean, neither one of us. 10 seconds ago.
So the Truman Show, he's living in a world that he thinks is real. And everyone is an actor in his world promoting this idea in his head that it's real, but it's not. Everyone around him, his friends, his school, everything, the house... is actors. All right. Then there's like a there's a shoreline, and he goes into a boat and goes out farther than he should have. They should have prevented this because he's living in a bubble. He's living in a complete bubble, and he goes out and hits the edge of his universe. Now, why does his universe have an edge? Because somebody else created it. And if you're going to create a world for someone, you're not going to make it infinite.
Right.
That's too much computing power. That's too much energy. That's too much effort.
There's an end to it.
So there's an end to it. So if someone's going to create your world, it's not going to go to infinity in every possible way. So someone suggested, and I haven't followed up on this, so I'm just hinting for you to dig this out of like Google Scholar if you can find it. But someone asked the question, cosmic rays are particles coming from deep space at extremely high energy, much higher energy than anything we can produce here on Earth. Okay? All right. Do you remember when they were worried that when we turned on the super collider, it would make black holes and all of Earth would
sink
into
antimatter
it?
Or something?
Yeah. Just there would be the end of the world?
Collapse, yeah.
Well, the energy produced in those particle accelerators is a fraction of what Earth is getting bombarded with by the universe itself. So if it were going to happen, it would have happened billions of years ago on Earth.
Right.
Caused by the universe. Right. So that's a certain a path of safety that you can think of. Just if something worse would have happened by these other methods, then you're good.
Okay,
all right.
Yeah.
So so someone hypothesized if we're in a simulation, how high energy would they make these cosmic rays? All right. And they were suggesting, so what's called the spectrum of cosmic rays is how many cosmic rays come to you at a certain energy. So then you go a higher energy, there's a little more, and there's a little more, and there's a little more. If there's a cutoff, why is there a cutoff? What? Maybe, okay, is there something natural in the universe? Or did the programmers say, I'm done here, they'll never reach that. I don't need to put real things in a universe that I have no confidence you'll ever reach. In the Truman Show, they didn't think he'd ever sail out to the edge of his bubble where the water meets the sky. They didn't think that would happen. And so I'm thinking if we're in a simulation, we should probe these edges of our world to see if we've reached the limits. If you're Mario in a Super Mario game, and you achieve consciousness, you're going to check on some things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're going to say, can I jump higher than this? How come I can't?
Right.
All right, because Myra jumps over things. All right? In an episode, to get really, because you started this.
I certainly did.
I could talk about anything, but you started this. There's an episode of Black Mirror titled Hang the DJ.
I remember it, yeah.
Okay. It has nothing to do with that title. But in that, it's a dating scenario,
yeah.
Okay? You're testing your dating abilities in this sort of simulation.
But you don't know it's a simulation when it's happening.
Yeah, you don't know.
Right.
But something happens. So one of the women who the lead guy is dating is throwing stones on the pond to skip them, skipping stones, okay? And when the first time you watch this, you don't even make any sense of it. It doesn't matter. They're just skipping stones. And she says, that's odd. Every time I try to skip a stone, it only skips three times. Not once, not twice, not four times, three times. And that's just kind of odd. And then they go on about the story. And if you're simulating something, the stones have nothing to do with anything.
Right.
If it's a match game, right? If you're matching people, so you throw in a little, you toss some code at it to say, yeah, they want to skip stones, let them skip stones
three times. We'll skip
three times. That's a good number.
Yeah,
if you know, that's good for anybody who throws stones in the water. But if you're expert at throwing stones, that's low.
Yes,
I was a stone thrower skipper in my day in camp. I could do it like 15 times.
Really?
If you get the right shape stone, the right angle, the right speed, the right stability of the surface of the water. So if you are a sentient character in that, you will start questioning the limits of what the programmer has set for you. That's the only point I'm making. Whereas nature, coming out of all natural laws, things will go to whatever limits the matter will take it. The energy, matter, space, time, and continuum will allow.
All right, let's see if anybody has a question for, we have people.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Did you want to do the chat?
Oh, I forgot about that. I always forget. I always forget to do this. I've kind of been into ChatGPT a little bit because people are so terrified that it's going to take everyone's jobs. And so what I do is I have...
And you're aiding and abetting this fact.
All right. Well, comedy I'm not as much worried about because I have it write roast jokes for every guest, and I've got two. And
You're not worried about it because you haven't tried to ask ChatGPT to write your next gig because you fear it might be better than you.
Actually, I know it is. These roast jokes are... These are home runs. Okay. Here's the two roast jokes for Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Created by ChatGPT. Yeah. Which number? 4 or 3?
Whichever one you can log into for free, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably 4.
Yeah, 4.
Is it 4?
Okay.
Neil deGrasse Tyson loves explaining things so much, he could mansplain gravity to Isaac Newton.
Ooh. Okay.
And there's
that in the audience, that'll get a. It was like 3 people in the audience, you know that that isolated echo clap.
Oh please, I live on that. Okay, and then here's the other one, another real harsh one.
Did they say mansplaining?
Yeah, it's just
that's not even creative because I'm explaining it to another man. So it would have to be like. I'd be Newton-splaining or something, or Apple-splaining. Be creative, ChatGPT. Come on.
It is bad. Neil's the kind of guy who, if you say, I love you to the moon and back, he replies, actually, that's only 477,800 miles, which is insignificant on a cosmic scale.
Did it really say that?
I swear to you.
Because it... Oh, okay.
Please tell me it's wrong.
Yeah. The round trip. The round trip is that far, right? Not the single distance to the
moon. No, but that's just to the moon. No, to the moon and back.
Okay, yeah. So here's what they're getting wrong there. While I do give extra explanations for things when people get it wrong, I hardly ever use the word actually.
Ah.
Because that's been parodied. The people, well, actually, there's an actually. I don't want to be the actually guy.
Right.
I want to tell you things that don't ruin your day, but enlighten it.
Okay.
And I do so without that word, so ChatGPT doesn't know enough about... My speech. You know why? Because it doesn't know what I say. It only knows what's recorded on the internet.
Right.
And so other people use the word actually in those situations, and it thinks that's real.
It's still missing.
In the large language models, it just gets the probability that word would come up. And in that context, it shows up every time for most people who are big explainers of things in the world.
It's still missing something that people share, experiences, things that make something funny. Like, these are words, and they're missing what would make that funny. You know, he mansplained to Isaac Newton. It's just words. It sucks. And I just love the ChatGPT.
Well, the fact that it could do anything at all, that's a start. We're at the dawn of this.
We are, yeah. Yes.
The people who want to indict all of AI because it fumbled, you know, the image software gives somebody 6 fingers or, you know, there's some weird, mistakes, really. And it's fun to make fun of it, but... The fact that that's all you're complaining about.
That's right.
Is evidence is doing the rest right.
Yeah.
It knows what a roast is.
It does. It's, and it, the roast jokes are not great. And again, maybe I'm just being a snob standard wise, but those are terrible, terrible jokes. Those are not good jokes.
Would you say that about any of your own jokes?
All of my own jokes. They stink.
Yeah, you can't tell that somebody else is terrible unless you can self-reflect. What do you feel in here?
I would say this, lack of game recognizes lack of game.
Well, you know the old saying, First-rate people hire first-rate people. Second-rate people hire third-rate people.
Ah, that's right. First-rate people, talent's not afraid of talent, but someone who's insecure is afraid of somebody else, they'll go lower.
Correct.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And that's a little bit of wisdom.
Makes perfect sense.
A little bit of insight.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to, if you might have the headphones.
There's actual, actual whole people.
There's a couple people, yeah. If they have any questions, a couple of, if you have a physics question, feel free to ask either of us. hello, what's your name?
Hi there, my name is Maiko.
Hi, Maiko, what's up, buddy?
Hey.
Hey, I just wanted to, first of all, thank you, Jim, for elevating the Kill Tony experience with your good comedy. And
thank you.
Neil, for elevating the collective consciousness with all your educational material. I had a quick question for both of you, mostly for Neil. As you know, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of news about these things in the sky. And, you know, I think we're all aware of your take on this stuff. It's probably not aliens. We've seen there's like a variety of different kinds of things that are floating, some that look to be more like military Earth tech, and then others. A lot of high-ranking people claiming or operating in ways that no technology that we've ever made could. So I'm just curious, you know, now that this things are changing, do you still feel the same way that you do about these objects? And is there any possibility, have you opened up, or could you possibly just as like an exercise be willing to consider like what possibilities could there be that they might actually be alien or like ultra-terrestrial? And is there a reason that we don't know about them? Like, are they deliberately hiding themselves from us? And if they're so advanced, like, wouldn't they have that capability? And wouldn't the government, you know, potentially want to keep that information hidden if they were aware of these things? So it's a little serious, but maybe Jim could make it funny somehow.
Well, let's not count on that. Sorry, I can't make my lack of erections funny. I don't have any shot with space. But you set it up in a way where and thank you for calling in. He wants Neil almost to say that there's, you see the way he was kind of like, I think he wants to ask you, but he also kind of, he really wants you to say that there
no,
might
no, he
be.
No, it was fully legit and straight head, but I'm not authorized to comment further on that subject. next question.
Oh, that's right. No. Hired government op. Yeah.
So I have just a few reflections on this.
Yes.
So I think there was a clip of me on CNN that went semi-viral or viral when I was directly asked, you know, what do I think these things are? Could they be aliens? And my reply was that, I'm an earthling, not an alien, so I can't presume to know alien motives. But if I were an alien and I'm going to hang out in Earth sky, I'm not going to do it over New Jersey. of all the places on Earth to visit, Northern New Jersey is not on my list, okay? And I don't mean any offense to New Jersey folks.
I'm from Jersey. You're right. Okay. It's the last place you want.
Yeah, even Jersey people agree.
Now, why would you?
They even agree. So that, number one. Number two, it's odd that people would somehow think, often the same people who hate big government, who think big government is bloated and inefficient, will turn around and declare that the government is putting on an amazing,
right,
perfect cover-up, hiding, stockpiling aliens in ways that no one knows about it. You can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. If you think the government is big and bloated and inefficient and a waste of money and nobody's there, then you can't now turn around and say they're masterminding a cover-up.
Right.
That's my second point. Third, it would be odd. Oh, by the way, plus you think the government is so competent that all the aliens that visited the world were scooped up by the U.S. government.
Right.
And not captured by someone's smartphone. There are 6 billion smartphones in the world, each one capable of high-resolution photos and videos. It's a different era from when we were growing up. When we were growing up, the only two people had cameras were like tourists and journalists.
Yep.
And if you saw something, you there was nothing you could do, okay? You could just tell people. It would be your eyewitness testimony. Well, in however high eyewitness testimony is in the court of law, it is the lowest form of evidence in the court of science. Bring in some tangible objects, okay? So all I'm saying to everybody is, if you photograph aliens, try to get a better image than a fuzzy thing in the sky.
Yeah.
Look at the images that the James Webb Space Telescope is obtaining from galaxies billions of light years away. Very high resolution images. And now you're telling me, here, I got definitive proof we're visited by aliens. Here's my fuzzy video of a light in the night sky. I need better evidence than that. That's all I'm saying.
I think you're right.
I'm not saying that they're not aliens. I'm saying that if we're being visited by aliens, it seems to me that would be crowdsourced into some of the 6 billion smartphones that are out there, because we are monitoring things as a collective way better than the U.S. military is. Because we are everywhere on Earth.
That's right.
In ways the military is not. Okay?
Yep.
Military is not in my backyard, but I got a camera, and they don't in that moment, at that time, in that place. So I'm just waiting around for better evidence. And the people who are sure they're aliens, they're eager to try to make that happen. Go for it. Go for it. Meanwhile, do you remember the Mexican aliens that
I
were
do.
Rolled out?
Right there.
I
yes.
loved them.
Yes.
I loved them.
I believe them.
Finally, they rolled out the aliens, and then none of the alien enthusiasts believed it.
Yeah.
And plus, it's odd that nearly all of the aliens people say that they've met or described or portrayed, they have like a head and two eyes, a nose, a mouth, a neck,
just like shoulders, us,
arms, yeah. legs. Most life on Earth with which we have DNA in common does not look anything like us. Oak trees. Do you know you share 20% identical genes with a banana? Okay. Now, if we see a colony of bananas coming to take over Earth, talk to me, call me then, because that's a realistic other alien rather than one that has all the features of simian, the simian branch of life in the tree of life. So it shows an absence of creativity.
Right.
Okay, and plus, do you remember that Fox special on alien autopsy?
Of course I did. I taped it and I still believe it.
Okay.
I watch it weekly.
What was weird was they cut open the alien. Again, it had like a head, shoulder, arm,
sure.
and a torso.
Shoes.
And they cut it open, and they're just pulling organs out. Like Mr. What's that game?
Mr. Potato Head?
No, not him. Doctor. What's that doctor game?
I play that a lot as a boy.
Operation.
Oh.
Operation. Play Doctor. Operation, where you'd go in and you'd pull out the organs, yep. right? Or the spleen or whatever. Okay. They were just pulling organs out, and they were not connected to anything. If life forms are not just sacks of objects that can just
right.
be yanked out without consequence. They're just pulling it out of the belly of this alien. That was odd. And in the corner, because it was supposed to take place in the 1940s, the alien autopsy. What year was it? 1947, something like that?
It was probably a Roswell reference. That's what I'm guessing.
Oh, it could have been, yeah. So yeah. that would be 1947. The phone in the back. There was a phone on the wall, okay? It had a coiled handset.
That's hilarious.
Which didn't come in until, like, decades later. It wasn't not part of what... You know, a coiled handset. The
like,
coil,
yeah.
which allows it to get longer than
sure.
its resting length. So I want to meet the aliens just like the next person.
So you don't say they don't exist. You're just saying you want better proof. I think that's fair.
Proof is not evidence. I just need better evidence.
Better evidence.
Than
yeah.
what has been put forth. And I'd love to meet the Mexican aliens, but people poo-pooed it. And so what you need is they need to share tissue samples with labs
sure.
around the world. That's how we do science. You don't just make a declaration and then charge people. I don't know if that's what they're doing, but it's like a circus act. Come pay to see, come see our thing, and we're not sharing the data with anybody. If you share the data, then when we brought back rocks from the moon, rocks went to all labs in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, so they can see and understand and verify what our findings are, or find something different that would be of interest to the world.
Now, if anybody has another question, that was a great answer. I hope that guy...
Yeah, sorry, I'll be tighter with my answer.
Phenomenal,
here.
Please.
Yeah.
We have another... We did headphones just for the next call.
Yeah, sure, sure. Let's
please
do it.
Take mm-hmm. as much time as you like with each one. Hello, you're on the phone with Jim Norton and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hi, guys. I just had a question mostly for Neil. Jim, I love your work.
Thank you, sir.
Neil, do you believe in the fifth dimension?
Oh, well, so I had a cousin... who was an arranger for the fifth dimension back in the 60s. Just so you know. So I got to see them. Every time they came through town, I got to see them in performance.
Is that real?
In the Americana Hotel, which is now the what is it, the Sheraton on 53rd, 52nd, off of 6th Avenue. And they came to the Ed Sullivan Show and performed there. We went to see them, and that's where I got my first autograph of anybody, which was Joan Rivers, who was performing that evening.
That is so crazy. You saw her on Ed Sullivan.
Yeah, on Ed Sullivan. Yeah, yeah. So anyhow, back to the...
Wait, hold on. That's fascinating to me. Did you talk
to
her
at all?
That's
how old I am. That's how old I am. Yeah. Yeah. But, so I interviewed her for my podcast, like, obviously decades later.
Sure, sure.
And I said, Joan, do you remember when we first met? I said, I was a little kid and you came out of the, I gave the whole thing. You came out of the Ed Sullivan Theater and I gave you a thing to sign and you signed an autograph. Do you remember that? She says, no. And it just goes on to the next joke. I don't know why that's funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah, she didn't pretend that she didn't remember it or anything. She didn't even say, well, I signed many autographs.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, at that age, it's like economy of words with the answers. Yeah.
So it's not a matter of belief in things or not. So math is hugely powerful. It can take you places you didn't even know you could go. Okay? So let me give a simple example. I highly value that question, and I want to give it the full treatment that it needs. Okay? Let's do some math together. So what is 2 plus 3?
Well, according to what I think, or our old friend Terrence Howard, 71. No, it's 5. Okay. I actually answered proudly.
Okay. 2 plus 3 is 5.
It is,
okay.
Yeah.
So what is 2 minus 3?
2 minus 3 would be -1.
Okay. There was a day before negative numbers were invented where someone would say, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's no answer to that. But someone asked the question, could that have an answer? And if it does, what would that answer be? And so you take numbers and say, well, numbers, maybe there's a number below 1. Oh my gosh, let's find a word for it. Let's call it 0. 0 had to be invented. It was invented in the Indus Valley, worked its way over to the Middle East, and it thrived in Baghdad. All right. And so, in fact, in the golden age of Islam, this was 1,000 years ago, the numerals that we currently use, as well as they refer to them as what do they call them? Hindu numerals, all right. But today we call numerals Arabic numerals because in that part of the world they like developed algebra. Algebra is an Arabic word. Algorithm is an Arabic word. Alcohol. All there's huge advances, and so they ended up sort of capturing the nomenclature of the day. Anyhow, so now you have a 0, but what do you do? That's the conduit between positive numbers and negative numbers. And now what use could a negative number possibly have, you can ask. And then I can say, okay, you have 2 apples. And I say, Jim, you owe me 3 apples. So you're in the hole 1 apple.
That's right.
So I can ask, how many apples do you have? -1 apples. It sounds a little weird, but it's the accounting of our barter.
Wouldn't it be interesting, though, to figure out how do we get to that point where I actually owe Neil deGrasse Tyson 3 apples? Like, when would I borrow 3 apples?
I'm keeping it simple, Jim. Okay.
If you have 3 apples, I'm low. I got a girl coming over.
I borrow them, and I'll give them back. Right. So let's keep going. So now you say, I have 2 apples. No, I have 1 apple. And I say, I want some apple from you. You say, you can't. I only have 1 apple. Then I say, give me 1/2 an apple. Oh, my gosh. You just invented fractions.
Yeah, 0.5 of an apple.
Yeah, that's a fraction. And a fraction goes beyond just counting numbers. So now the math is giving us tools to go places that we didn't know you could even go before. Okay. How about this? What is the square root of 9?
3.
Yeah, could,
I
because,
love having the answers.
Because 3 times 3 is 9.
Yes.
Okay. It's also -3, by the way, because -3 times -3 = 2 9.
2 negatives are positive.
You get a positive. Sure. Exactly. Okay. What is the square root of -9?
3.
No, because 3 times 3 is +9. Okay. Is it minus three? No, because minus three times minus three is plus nine.
Is it 3i?
It is 3i. Oh! Bah! Bam! Bam!
Thank you.
Okay, well, what is I? We had to invent a new kind of number to answer that question.
In fairness, I can't lie.
Oh, he's looking. I see. I'm not looking at this cheat sheet here. Let me take back that
I know.
That fist, and how do you undo a fist bump?
I know. I shamefully accepted
it. Oh, my gosh. I'm not facing your cheat sheet here. All right.
I can't lie, though. I had to let you know.
Fine.
Yes. But 3i, that describes us. Three idiots.
Okay. So, the dimensionality of the world in mathematics can be completely described. We can characterize what a one-dimensional world is. That's a line. Two dimensions. That's a flat sheet. And by the way, if you're if you exist in three dimensions, then, and I walk up to you, I only see your perimeter. Okay? But if I had access to a third dimension and look down on you, I can see your entire insides. Mm. Because I'm not... Your perimeter is not preventing access to the... If I wanted to see your insides within the two dimensions, I'd have to cut you open, pry it apart, and then I'd be able to see what's on the inside. But if you have skin in two dimensions is just a line, and I will walk around you, and that's you. Okay. Up at a dimension to three dimensions, here we are. We move not only in length, width, but also height. Well, what's that like? Well, suppose we had a fourth dimension. Extending this mathematical understanding, a fourth spatial dimension creature could look at you, reach in, pull out your tumor without ever crossing the boundary of your skin.
Right.
In the same way, you as a three-dimensional person can reach into a two-dimensional being and pull out whatever is ailing it without cutting its skin. So that's an interesting feature,
yes,
of four dimensions. And there are other features I could list here, but that's a good one. All right, how about five dimensions? Oh, my gosh, we can completely describe that mathematically. 6, 10, 11, 100 dimensions. So we are locked and loaded. We are ready mathematically to accommodate any dimensionality we might stumble on, discover, invent in the future of this universe. So it's not a matter of whether I believe in five dimensions. It's a matter of, is there a cause for which we need to invoke it? And the day we invoke it, the mathematicians are ready in the wings to describe what its properties are, how to interact with it, how to navigate it, and the like.
Now, before I forget, I want to go back to what you had said before, because I've never heard that story. Your cousin was in a band called The Dimension. The Fifth Dimension. It was your cousin?
My cousin was the arranger for the Fifth Dimension. And on some of their performances, he would also play the piano.
Was that your first concert seeing them at Ed Sullivan?
You know, I guess so. I never thought about it that way, but that would have to be the case. Yes, my first concert.
So as a little
kid.
But
I would, it's, to me, concert is you save up the money, buy the ticket, and you go and wait in line.
Sure.
To me, that's the concert experience, not to be privilegedly taken to, you know. So anyhow, yeah, and my first crush was on what's her name? My first crush ever.
Was she in the Fifth Dimension?
Yeah.
I don't know the band. I'm not familiar.
What do you mean
band.
You don't know the band? What?
I'm a Black Sabbath fan.
Okay.
I listen to Ozzy. But what's one of the big songs?
Hold on. You've never heard of the Fifth Dimension, and that worries me because now I want to see your Earth papers to make sure you are not
an alien creature. I might just be placed here. I'm a programmer came up with me. And forgot to add
you got
a chin.
You do have a different kind of look.
I know,
from
I
other
do.
People.
I'm kind of like a block. I blend into the background.
You know, it's a.
What's one of their big songs?
Marilyn McCoo. Marilyn McCoo.
Oh, I know who she is. Yes, yeah, of course.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Didn't she have a big solo
yes, she
career
did.
Afterwards?
Yes, she did. Yes, she
you
did.
You had a crush on Marilyn McCoo.
Oh, how could you not?
So you met her, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
As
oh, yeah.
a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Joan Rivers.
You know, I was like eight or something. I was.
Is she still alive?
Yeah, I think they all are. Yeah.
So you still see your cousin?
No. Oh, my cousin. Well, my cousin died.
He
was much older than they were.
Okay. Yeah. As the arranger.
As the arranger.
Now, Ed Sullivan, it's funny. I've done Letterman in the Ed Sullivan Theater. You don't meet many people, or I haven't, who actually went to the Ed Sullivan show.
I went to the Ed Sullivan show in that theater, which was not called the Ed Sullivan Theater at the time.
Right.
It was named in his honor later.
And how was the show? How was
I think that's true, because I think that, you know, when they needed to sort of rebrand it going forward and honor the history but keep it alive, that's where it was.
Was that the only time you went there?
Oh, no, I went. They were there more than once, and I went to the Ed Sullivan Theater more than once.
Who else did you see? Do you remember anybody else you saw?
No. Remember, that was a variety entertainment show. You got the guy with the plates spinning.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are these acts that you're not going to remember their names necessarily. So.
Wow, yeah, because you don't meet many people. Like, I've never seen him. I didn't even know if his monologue was like. Did he do a monologue like Carson?
I know, because I don't know that he was a comedian. He was like a, you know, he was a peddler of circus acts, occasionally deeply hitting pop culture with the Beatles.
Elvis, yeah, and things like that, sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
That's interesting to me, because, I don't know much about Neil deGrasse Tyson as a kid. I mean, I know you wrestled. You know, you said you did it to get your scholarship. Like, you know what I mean? You needed the scholarship, right?
Well, I wanted to maximize the chances that I'd be able to go to and afford college. So I wanted to make sure I had another sort of athletic thing. I wasn't that much interested in basketball, but wrestling was cool.
Do you think things, too, I guess Elon wants to help get those astronauts back. They're stuck in space. Do you think that he's... a guy like, because he's independent, he's a guy that can help stuff like that with space travel.
Well,
space
last I checked, that's what the plan was. Because was it the Boeing Starliner?
Didn't work.
Yeah, it wasn't going to work out. They sent that back without a passenger. And the good thing is, in a commercially supported space landscape, you go to backup, and backup in this case is a whole other company. It's SpaceX. So yeah, last I checked, that was planned.
Is it true that on the space station is only 10% less gravity than on Earth?
Space station has zero gravity.
Wait, zero gravity?
Zero gravity. It is in free fall around the Earth. And if you're in free fall, you have zero gravity.
Why did I read that it had only 10 or 11% left, but because...
Was that an AI bot that you tried to...
I don't know. I was looking up...
So here's the problem.
See, it's about 90% Earth's gravity. AI overview. However, astronauts feel weightless because they're in constant free fall.
That's what I'm telling you.
Yes. So is the computer saying that? Is that being deceptively incorrect?
I don't even know what that sentence means. Who came up with that sentence?
AI
that was
AI.
You know, experiences 90% of Earth's gravity. I don't know what that... The International Space Station is in free fall, as is everything within it. So I don't know what that AI...
is
trying to tell you.
Okay, so it's incorrect. I'm glad I asked.
No. Maybe it's got some insights I don't know about, but I know what free fall is because Isaac Newton first described this. And me and Isaac Newton go back because we can do, you know.
Sure.
We can roast each other. Okay?
Yeah, you're mansplaining to Isaac Newton. Yeah, that was a good one.
You know what Isaac Newton did? He discovered the laws of gravity, the laws of optics, basically, practically on a dare, invents... integral and differential calculus. Then he turned 26.
Yeah, he was a really brilliant guy.
And when he died, by all evidence, he died a virgin.
Did he really?
Yeah. So
I mean, that type of no woman back then likes to hear about that. Here, hold this apple, babe. Hold this apple. You're not getting laid doing that.
Plus, we think he wasn't even gay. I mean, the gay. I've seen a tract in the gay community that try to claim him based on some of his letters, but there's no. There's no record of close friends of any kind, you know.
When do you think, quote unquote, like brilliant
close friends, like, you know, buddy, you know,
yeah,
when you hang out
course.
With.
It's like when your aunt's a lesbian. Oh, she has a roommate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's FORHERS.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The whole thing with, when did nerddom, and I'm saying that kind of as the colloquial expression, mm-hmm. become like a really sexy, popular
thing? Oh, I know the exact moment.
You do?
That it happened.
Huh. What year?
I wonder if I have to remember the year. It was either 84 or 85. It's the year.
The Apple commercial?
No. Shit. No. No. But the Apple commercial was 84, January, of course. You're talking about the...
The Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah, the Super Bowl commercial that aired once.
That's right.
Only during the Super Bowl. And I have a lot to say about that, but I want to get to taking phone calls here.
Oh, yeah, we'll take another one.
But hang on. But in a quick second. So in the... what was I saying?
You're talking about the when nerddom became sexy.
So it was the minute that the movie Revenge of the Nerds was released.
That's right.
And it's 1984. Revenge of the Nerds was seminal because it occurred at the same time that computer nerds, you could no longer slam them into the lockers because the quarterback might need them to help them with their computer homework.
Right.
Okay? Or anything related to computers that were coming on the scene. In 1984 was the personal computer with the Macintosh. 1983 was the IBM PC that was on your desk. You needed nerds to figure this out. And in that film, it showed that nerds can be horny too. Okay?
Yeah.
It's not like they're asexual. And that if you mess with nerds, they're going to win in the end because they're smarter than you. And in the end, brains overcome brawn.
Yeah, yeah. And the big talent show where Lamar was dancing. You remember that one? Was that his name? The guy, the gay guy? In
the effeminate. We don't know if he was gay. He was definitely feminine.
That's true.
Precise. You can just be precise.
I will be precise. But
there are effeminate straight people.
There are.
Okay.
Well, yes, I guess so. I mean, I'm a masculine guy. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, yeah, I guess you're correct. Let's take another phone call.
All right.
But, and you have to serve.
Oh, yeah.
We have no ability to hear them without
it. Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey.
How you doing, buddy?
Neil, you're an agnostic, right?
That word comes closest to describing my circumstances, yes.
Okay. Have you really looked into Jesus Christ and if he is the true God?
Yes, I have.
And what did you come up with? What was your...
So,
your end result.
Yeah, so I look more broadly. There are people who lean towards one religion or another, and then they sort of stay within that religion, and they're convinced by the doctrines, the tenets, the holy writings. But if you spend time looking at other religions, so Hinduism, there's Islam, there are these other religions where people are no less convinced than someone who is a deep believer in the divinity of Jesus, they're no less convinced of the divinity of their own tenets. In Islam, for example, that Muhammad is the last prophet. Jesus was a prophet, but not divine in their thinking. And they're no less convinced, no less emboldened by this research that they conduct within their religions. And I take a step back and I look at the world's religions and I look at the world's gods that have been praised throughout the history of our species, and that number is huge. It's almost an unlimited scroll. I think there's some wiki pages that where you can just say, what are the gods that people have worshipped over civilization? And that list just scrolls like practically forever. And so what the ardent atheist will say is that the devout Christian is also an atheist. They're an atheist with regard to every other god there was. But the atheist is simply adding one more to that, and that would be the Jesus God, the Jesus variant of the God. And so an atheist and a devout Christian have much more in common than you might otherwise think for that reason. And so But where I find myself returning is to 1755 in Portugal, Lisbon, where on All Saints Day, Lisbon was one of the holiest cities in Europe. On All Saints Day, in the morning, where everyone is in church, there was a major earthquake. Now, in the 1700s, what's the biggest structure in any town?
I'm going to guess the church.
The church.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is, of course, the first to drop in an earthquake. Tens of thousands of people were killed in the church during this this case. Then, because the epicenter was offshore, it wasn't just the earthquake. There was a tsunami that followed that basically wiped Lisbon from the map. Something like 80,000 people died. This was a very big philosophical problem for religious people of the day. And philosophers, this is basically birthed, I don't want to call it modern because it's 300 years out, but the modern atheist movement began with that, in the writings of philosophers after that event, because they said, if there is a God, and they were referring to the monotheistic God, but if there is a God, that God is either not all-powerful or not all good, because many innocent people died. Or maybe 80,000 people were all criminals, but were the children criminals? Were the, you know, the women and children who are just trying to, you know, keep the household? So there's no good answer to that other than the repeated one, which is God works in mysterious ways. Well, that means you don't really understand God. And if you don't understand God, why do you believe you understand him if something nice happens? Oh, that's God working miracles. No, if you don't understand God, are you going to cherry pick how and when and where you claim to understand the motives? So I step back and I see this. And all I can say is I remain unconvinced that there is any kind of divine power at work anywhere in the universe based on what I see. And I will add to that that I'm betting, we can do this formally if you'd like, but I'm betting that I own more books on religion than religious people own books on science.
Yep.
I do a lot of reading in that space.
I said, yeah, I own books on neither. I bet. So
I have some fluency, not like a preacher would, but usually more than most people who declare themselves to be religious.
Have you ever, because I went to the Vatican, and I'm not a religious guy at all. I don't believe most of it, but being in there and they...
Most of what?
Religion. I don't...
Well, there are many religions, so all religions.
I don't subscribe to any of it, really. I don't know what the truth is. Maybe there's something. I hope there is. I'm kind of vague.
Yeah.
But in the Vatican, and again, maybe just because I was under the Vatican and they show you St. Peter's, what they say maybe is bone, but I definitely felt something. And again, I don't attribute that to anything other than maybe just the emotion of being there. Have you ever, in any of those places, or been in any of those places where you felt a pull towards one or the other?
That's a great question. So religious spaces are by design, I mean, are constructed to evoke feeling of reverence and respect and majesty. Mm. So, and then there's a lot of practice in making that happen, all right? However, if you look at many animist cultures, so animism is a form of religion where there are no temples, typically. There are no shrines. Nature is the shrine. Nature is the temple. The wind, you know, the breeze, the brook, the mountain. So in animism, the worship of nature is that's the tabernacle, right? That's the church. And so I have felt great feelings of reverence just being in nature, being on a mountaintop, looking at the night sky. So for me, nature does that without reference to a holy book that is describing also who you should sleep with, what you should eat on what day of the week, and who you should be friends with.
Okay, that's fair. Let's go to...
So more specifically...
Oh, yes.
So, yes, I've been in churches that evoke this. Grand. I mean, imagine what that would have looked and felt like if you were a peasant that came from the countryside and never even saw a city before. Today, it's like it's almost quaint sitting in the middle of buildings that are 100 stories tall. But in the day, with the stained glass and the beams of light coming out, all of that, of course, that would evoke these feelings. But keep in mind, human beings built those structures.
That's true. And that feeling I could have gotten could have just been because they said it was St. Peter. I don't know if it was. But just because he's such a historical figure that I thought, like, wow, I'm looking at a really... I might have thought the same way
if I saw Napoleon. All the apostles are historical. I mean, there's a lot written about them.
Yes.
And churches made big money by declaring that, by way of reliquaries, that they would... Reliquary, I think I... Reliquary.
I haven't said that word ever.
It's a reliquary is a vessel that contains artifacts, usually bones, fingers, something right. that is of someone who is famous. And churches would make a lot of money declaring that they had the remnants of any of the apostles, all of whom were saints, became sainted, achieved sainthood. St. Peter's Basilica and St. Peter's, of course, if anybody's going to have a remnant of anybody, it would be St. Peter in St. Peter's Basilica.
That's right. It worked out nicely there. And they tried very hard with the Shroud of Turin to make it something too. And that just, I mean, I rooted for it, but it just seems like it was paint.
Well, you don't have to seem like it. You can subject it to science.
They did. I think they found it was paint, right?
They found it was a brilliant forgery from like medieval times. Right. They found like pollen particles in it that they could trace from that era.
So when you're talking about being at the top of a mountain or in nature or observing, for you, that's kind of the equivalent of a religious experience.
Well, I'll distinguish a religious experience from a spiritual one. You know, religions tend to come with rules and regulations and dare I call it baggage, controlling how you live. Whereas a spiritual experience is just a feeling, an emotion that doesn't require you read a holy book to feel it or understand it. So yeah, mountaintop that's one of the places where I get spiritual connectivity to the cosmos and nature as well.
Have you had it in life at all, or is it only that time you felt it, or have you ever felt that like in regular life or in...
Oh, well, there's one moment. I don't know if I'm misusing the word spiritual, but I felt something, okay? You know the band Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Sure.
Right, the tragic plane crash.
Yep.
Killed. Right. One of my favorite rock songs is Freebird, live by Lynyrd Skynyrd. I'm not typically a live guy because I prefer the quality of a studio recording relative to hearing, you know, fans and cheering. I want to hear the music.
Yeah.
But in that case, they have such command of the music and their audience and their riffs that it is elevated to what I would count as a masterpiece.
Mm.
So there's a point in there where Ronnie Van Sant, early in the song, someone begins, is it the keyboard or the guitar? I don't remember which. And he says, play it pretty for Atlanta. And I said, they must be live in Atlanta. Okay, that must have been where this got recorded. All right. Put a pin in that for the moment. I give 30 to 40 public talks a year in theaters, in cities. Typically, it's in one of these Grand Dam theaters that were fortunately fixed up for modern use. Otherwise, they would go into disrepair and they'd get replaced by something much less interesting looking. You know, back when going to the theater was you plan around.
Yeah, a dress up, a happening.
You dress up going to theater. So when I give these public talks, they're typically in theaters that have, you know, 2,000, 3,000 seat capacity. All right, I'm in Atlanta for one of my talks at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, which is one of those grand damn theaters.
Yeah.
And I'm about to go out on stage and I look up and there's an archway with neon words in it that say, play it pretty for Atlanta, Ronnie Van Sant. And it was like, whoa, I'm going to go on the same stage where he performed that song, which is one of my favorite rock songs, where he said that line. Because he's not going to say that line in studio or in any other city. He said it there, and he said it then when he performed. And was it a spiritual moment? I welled up a little bit. Because you know what it did? It boosted my own expectations of myself in what I was going to deliver to that audience in my effort to bring the universe down to earth. That was as terrestrial a spiritual experience as I've had.
It's all, and there is like a childlike awe or wonderment when you're doing something like that. Like, it goes beyond like being a smart adult. It's like, this is just so great and so cool that I'm actually doing this thing.
I never take it for granted that 2,000 people will come hear an astrophysicist talk for 2 hours. That's that. I don't take that for granted.
Like, you say, they certainly don't come to see certain comedians talk for 45 minutes.
So that puts a very high expectation on me, and it is my duty to ascend to that level.
Is it also a moment too where you, where that happens and you go, wow, my life is good? Like it's almost like,
I don't think about it that way.
No,
I think about it is, this is how I think about it. I, by all of the forces operating on my life within it from the outside, I have become a servant of the public's curiosity. I don't say to myself, my life is good. I say, I become a much greater servant than I ever imagined for myself. And my hopes for my and expectations are that I can continue to deliver at that level. By the way, recognizing this phrase, what did that require? It meant I had to like listen to rock music, find that song, like the song, find the live version, know something about it, remember lyrics well enough that I will know when something's not a lyric that he's uttering it on stage because it's not in the script, and then make that connection, which is evidence to me that in life, try to learn as much as you can about as many things as you can, because the next day, there could be a connection you would make that would otherwise go unnoticed. Imagine living a life and things are happening and you don't know, you don't even have a thought. And you don't even know how much of life you're not experiencing because you're not making connections you could.
What is your favorite movie?
The Matrix.
Is there any movie
Matrix 1.
Any movie that you cry watching?
It's not hard to make me cry.
Really? I would have thought just the opposite.
No. I get in a movie.
Yeah.
A story well told. I'll well up.
Is there one in particular
that makes me cry?
Yeah.
You know, movies that are tender, you know, not that are purposefully tear-jerking.
Right.
Because then I see through that.
It's annoying.
It's annoying. Just
saccharine. Yeah.
Yeah. I like this. It's saccharine. So, yeah, I'm... I will tear up more at a simple Broadway play or even a musical where someone... I used to hate it. Growing up, it was like, I feel a song coming. Uh-oh, they're about to ruin it. You know, just tell them what you feel.
Yes.
Don't sing about it. But as I got older and I began to embrace and feel and appreciate the dynamic range of human emotion, that I realized there's a point where just speaking your emotion doesn't go all the way. When it wells up so much you have to sing it, turn it into poetry, oh my gosh. That's the world I want to live in, because then I'll know I'll be fully expressing what it is to be human, which is a different line of emotion and intellectual investment than what it is to be the scientist.
Would you be annoyed if I was singing to you to try to get some emotion?
Yes.
Let's go to another call.
That was
a great answer.
Hi.
Hi,
Jim and Dr. Tyson.
Hello.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you guys. Actually, Dr. Tyson, I just saw your interview with Lawrence Fishburne last week. It was really good.
Thank you. It's a bit of a bromance we have going there. Yeah.
I had a question for Jim about sobriety.
Okay.
If that's all right.
Sure.
I just got 5 years of sobriety uninterrupted.
Great.
I kind of feel like I lost a bit of my personality, and I don't really feel like myself anymore. It's almost like I just feel like a thing that just exists. Like I don't, and I don't know. You've been sober way longer than me, and I don't really have anybody to talk to about it in that regard. So I don't know if you had any advice, or like, is this like a normal like feeling?
What my suggestion would be is this.
My
suggestion would be this. Being sober, sometimes we hit a wall, which is like a stagnation when you're growing. You hit like these things because like you have to keep doing things to grow or it becomes stagnant. Usually that was a sign that I needed to do something new. Maybe work another step. I don't know if you have a sponsor or somebody you talk to. But you're not just this empty vessel. You know, maybe you need to fill it with other things, but I would say it's time to do something different to grow a little bit, which might be, you know, fourth step or fifth step or wherever you are. I don't know.
Jim, that's exactly what I would have said. And I have I'm not claiming psychological expertise on this, but what I do know, let me give it by example. You've been to people's homes, for example, and they've got, let's say the guy was on the football team in high school and it's got a photo on the,
that's right,
on the mantle.
Yep.
Trophy.
Trophy. Yeah.
And is throwing the winning touchdown. And you hear them tell that story often.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize at some point they didn't continue to accrue to their lives. They kept referencing this one time where they had this moment of greatness or respect from others or happiness. Whatever it was, that becomes their reference point to anything that happens afterwards. So what I've tried to do, people said, oh, Neil, you used to dance, which is true. I was a performing member of three different dance companies. And so long ago, it was 40 pounds ago. And so then they say, oh, there's Dancing with the Stars. Why don't you go on Dancing with the Stars? And I say, no, because that's what I used to do. And I was good at it, and I was flexible, and I was strong, and I was in shape. But I'm writing books now, okay? When I was dancing, no one was wanting to publish what I wrote, okay? So I kept in my life continuing to learn, to grow, to be curious. And as that comes together, you, I don't want to call it reinventing yourself, but that's kind of, I guess, what it is. You're bringing more life into your life. So that you, I'm imagining at some point you won't even remember what that was like, where I had this great personality under the influence. You're into something else, and that's not even a thought anymore. And I'm just echoing what you just told him, Jim, that if the moment your life stalls,
yeah,
that's your point where you always try to remember what it was like.
Well, I've hit those moments too in sobriety where I just feel like, is this all there is? It's a common thing, 5 years especially. A lot of guys, they say there's a lot of, 90-day cakes and two-year cakes, and they said there's not as many 5, 6, 7 because a lot of people drop out then because you get to this. Is this all there is? It's time to do something else to keep adding memories, keep growing.
Adding memories. Yeah. That's the phrase.
Keep growing.
That summarizes everything I just said.
And also, Dancing with the Stars, they wanted that.
Stop.
Because
No.
They would have such fun with that with you. Dancing with the Stars.
I know. I get it. I see what they did there.
It would be Betelgeuse.
Yes.
Is that how you say that one?
Betelgeuse.
God damn me.
It's not Beetlejuice.
Betelgeuse.
Actually, that's an Arabic star name, as our two-thirds of all star names are Arabic from that era, Betelgeuse. And it's loosely translated to armpit of the great one.
Really?
It's the armpit of Orion in the sky.
Delightful name for a star. Do we have another caller with
armpit.
Have a question?
No. So you finished. I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, that was actually it. That was it. I with sobriety, I don't actually say the name of the group just because the group requests anonymity at the level of press, radio, film. So I just say if he's sober and he goes to 12th step, he knows what I'm talking about. Maybe talk to a sponsor, fifth, sixth step. But I've hit those moments where, fuck, is this all there is? I'm stuck.
Right.
And,
right,
you know, you're getting rid of a lot of stuff. They say get rid of all the crap you're not, and whoever you are just kind of shows up. Yes.
Hey, what's going on, man? I wanted to address some comments that Nikki made on Sewer Fight.
My wife.
One of them being that, like, dude, yeah, she a week removed from smoking weed. Now, all of a sudden, everybody who smokes weed is a stagnant loser. As a bona fide member of the Jim and Sam Smoke Club, I resent that statement.
That's funny.
Yes.
That's for one.
That's
and
funny.
Two,
that was a quote by my wife, yeah.
They both, JK Ultra and Nikki, both looked at you and said you was a psychopath for smelling your food. My question to the good doctor is, what is your nose for then, man?
That's a good question. I'll tell you this. JK Ultra is my ex-girlfriend. She's one of my closest friends.
You have
friends.
To translate some of that for me.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
She's huge on TikTok. She's big in conspiracies and aliens, and she's great. She's my ex, and she's one of my closest friends. And like an asshole, I introduced her to my wife, and that's who she calls
the
when we
stupidest
fight.
Stupidest thing.
I couldn't have been a dumber.
Let me slap you.
Please do. Hard and in the front of the face. I couldn't be dumber.
Oh.
But they were talking about... What was the question? I was talking about,
smelling food.
Smelling food. I smell my food sometimes, and they Jen said I'm crazy. My wife said I'm crazy, and he's asking you, what is the nose for if not to smell your own food and to kind of maybe it's a health thing that nature put on us.
Well, the smell goes beyond your taste. I mean, they're related, of course, but there are things that have smells and aromas that enhance your taste. I mean, I think people who smell and taste their food are getting more out of that experience. Let me give a broader sense of this. It's a little off track, but it connects.
Yes.
You ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. We have five traditional senses, right? Touch, smell, sight, hearing, and what did I leave out?
Taste.
Taste, of course. Okay. These are our senses. This is how we receive information about the world beyond us. Beyond our physical existence, okay? So that's how we probe nature around us, those five senses, primarily. There are other more subtle senses. Let's stick with the five traditional ones.
The big ones.
The big ones. All right. So now watch. Look at what we do in civilization to serve those senses. Oh, my gosh. There are people who pay millions of dollars for artwork to just look at. There are people who go to concerts, waiting in line for days, spending hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars just to hear notes played or sung by another human being or by instruments. Look at how much you could live off of beans and rice, paying 50 cents a meal. But no, people go out to restaurants. They'll spend tens, hundreds, some cases thousands of dollars on a meal, on a bottle of wine, on a thing, but five courses, and it's the French this, and it's got this, and to serve your sense of taste. Look at what people do. How much do you pay for massages?
Someone
no, not the extra one, just the basic massage.
Okay. All right, because it goes up exponentially depending.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the basic people will to have your muscles massaged. Think about that. So if you have senses that you do not, so we justify those costs.
Yes.
Because it brings us pleasure. Pleasure. Okay. So if you have the capacity to smell the food before you eat it and taste it, knowing the two work together while you're chewing it, and you deny yourself those pleasures, you are not living life as fully as you biologically can. And I'm reminded of people say, oh, are you cold? I can raise it. Are you warm? They're always checking with me. You get step in a, you know, in a car. Yeah. They wanna, and I'm thinking, whatever it is, I'm fine. Now, why do I say that? Because, yeah, occasionally I'll feel cold. I'm reminded that I can feel that.
So you like that feeling.
Occasionally, I'm going to say it differently. Occasionally, I'm a little hot. I'm sweating a little. I'm okay with that. Let me sweat. Let me feel a little cold. I know at the end of the day, I'm going to, you know, snuggle in my bed. But during the day, allow me to feel that as a reminder of what our human physiology is capable of experiencing in this world. If you narrow it down, oh, it's 70 degrees, put on the heat. It's 74 degrees, put on the air conditioner. If you narrow that life experience, are you really alive or as alive as you could be? And it works in the other direction as well. I remember the first time I left New York City as a kid. Well, I was a teenager, early teens, on my own, and I went to Boston. And it's another city, but I'm walking the street. And I said, something's not right here. What's not? Oh, I know. The street has no smell.
You missed it.
In New York, and I didn't know that I would miss it. In New York, there's the pizza shop. There's the urine in the alley. There's the But there's smells.
Sure.
They don't have, and there's dog poop all over back in the day.
Yeah.
In the day.
And no, human.
No, oh, stop. Did they finally get you a bathroom to poop in? So it's, these are, it's a reminder that you're alive. Because now imagine what the world must be like to dogs who can smell things a quarter mile away. Just imagine the world that they experience just from smell.
Yeah, but you look at some of the choices dogs make with their noses, and you're like, you're really not getting the most out of this. I just walked
yeah,
in.
Yeah, dude, there's some roses over here, and you're sniffing somebody else's butt. What are you doing? Okay, but they are not shirking on their what their capacity for their entire olfactory experience can give them. So, yeah, I smell my food anytime I can.
Good for you and me too. And before we go, we should take one more phone call. This is, you've been amazing. I love the idea that I can't stop smelling my food. And you're right, I'm getting more out of life.
Wait, if smell, but also eat it, is what I'm saying. I don't know what...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I don't smell it and then just get rid of it. I smell it, I eat it, the whole
right, right. And that's part of why we heat food, because it activates the molecules, more will evaporate up, and then enter your olfactory glands.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's part of the value. Yeah, ice cream doesn't really much have a smell. You have to sort of melt it in your mouth, and then
you're right.
You get the taste.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Neil.
Hello, madam.
My name's Jensina.
Hi.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so nervous. So I guess it's mostly for Neil. So I was raised Mormon. I'm almost 40. I've always felt like out of place and different around other people. You know, being raised Mormon, I was kind of limited with my access to basically learning things that I wanted to learn. Like my dad would be building things and I would be his gopher and I would just be like learning as much as I could. Just felt like I was absorbing everything. But that wasn't like nurtured in me. And now I'm realizing that I'm probably on the gifted spectrum. And I feel like I've wasted a lot of time not reaching my potential.
What is your
how
question?
How can I help myself?
Okay. So a couple of things. If it was...
You should field this one.
Okay. Okay. If it was 70 years ago and, you know, you go back to like the first half of the 20th century, life expectancy was between 60 and 70, okay? And so if you were 40, your life is two-thirds over. Just get ready, you know, get your personal effects in order. And
yeah.
All right? Now you can fully expect, especially if you grew up Mormon, that they don't drink alcohol, and there's certain dietary factors that will make it likely that you'll live slightly longer than the average person in the country. You can fully expect to live to be 80, 90 for sure. So you have more of your life ahead of you than you have currently lived. So for you to say or to even think, I wasted my life, what am I going to do? Start life. Okay? You know, do things that kids do. Go to the zoo. Go to museums. Go to places where curiosity drives the very existence of why the thing is there. And open yourself up. What is that? How does that work? Why? I don't know. Let me find out. Is there a video? Is there a book? Is there a person I can call? And all of a sudden, use the term? You become reborn. Okay. You're a born again or born for the first time curious person. And this is how and why people stagnate. We hinted to this just earlier in our conversation. I don't know if you heard it, but there are people who they graduate high school, or they graduate college, and what do? They walk down the steps, toss their notes in the air, say, "School's out."
Yeah,
school's out. There's an anthem to this.
They're done learning.
No, what is the anthem? A rock anthem.
We are the champions.
No,
shit,
no.
I'm never going.
Ouch. Are an alien.
Is it something school's by the fifth dimension?
Out for the summer.
Oh, Alice Cooper. Yes.
School's out
forever.
Forever. Okay. The fact that exists means that in school, there are people who don't want to be in school ever again. And I don't blame the people. I blame the school, because you know what the school didn't do? What it tried to force you to just memorize stuff, but it didn't instill within us all an eternal sense of curiosity. Because if they succeeded at that, you would say, I don't want school to end. Leave me here. I want to keep learning. But you can't stay in school forever because you have to join the economy. But if you still have that sentiment and you join the economy, you say, I will now begin a life of learning. Because school, at its best, would teach you, instill within you, foster within you the curiosity you once had as a child, and now you make it a permanent part of your adulthood. And I don't know if that's probably
100%,
a bigger hammer than was necessary to reply to your question, but that's how I look at it. And if you feel a little uncurious, like I said, just put yourself in situations where, what is that? How does that work? What's going on there? It's not because the search, the curiosity is not as much about the answer as it is about the search for how things work. Because therein you find other bits and pieces that come together to make the thing work that it is that you're trying to understand or explore. So you're born again.
Yes. And as we wrap up, because we have to wrap up.
We got to wrap.
Yeah. I mean, this has been amazing. I would talk to you for 6 hours. Uh-huh. I have one final question for you because it drives me crazy. This double split experiment that they do in physics where they fire the things through the two slits. And if it's unobserved, it does one thing. If it's observed, it does another thing.
Yes. So observed, we use that word, but for everyone else outside of physics, we shouldn't use that word. The way we should say is, was it measured? Was it not measured?
And they think it
because when you use the word observe, then the new age folks come in and say, "Oh, so your consciousness is affect the outcome." No, it has nothing to do with you, your consciousness.
Right.
It has to do with whether a measurement was made by anything, be it your eyeballs or an apparatus.
Does it? But there's this big mystery around this thing, and it drives me crazy. Isn't it just simply that whatever it is that's measuring it is somehow interacting with it and affecting it? Like, that's why they behave differently, because they're being measured by whatever
not,
it is.
It's simpler than that. You're trying to outthink it. You're trying to think deeper than what's actually going on, okay? How do I know you're sitting in front of me? Because I can see you.
Yes.
How is it I see you? Well, if I turn off...
Because you're unlucky.
Looking at your alien visage here. How do I... If I turned off all lights in the room, I would not know you were there unless I smelled your breath...
Right.
Or you spoke.
Yes.
But if you speak, then you're not using light to communicate with me. You're using the vibrations of sound molecules.
Yes.
Okay. You also have a thermal signature because you are alive.
Yeah.
And your body is nearly 100 degrees. So, all right. But if I'm just talking about light, if I turn on, I can't see you. Okay. Now I turn on the lights, I see you. Very nice. Okay.
Thank you.
You are a macroscopic object.
Well,
when I sign,
I've been told.
By and large, you are a microscopic, yes. Macroscopic object. So, if you were smaller and smaller and smaller, okay, and I turn on the light, still there's not much of a change, but wait a minute. Suppose you were the size of a few molecules, or one molecule, or an atom. How do I know you're in front of me? I have to turn on the lights.
Yeah.
I turn on the light, a photon hits the atom, knocks it into another state. Not a physical state of the union, but another configuration that is not what it is doing when I'm not measuring it. So it's not that it's interacting in some mysterious way. You're going to have to shine light on it to know anything about it at all.
So the photon hitting, that's kind of what I meant by interaction, like the photon.
Yes, it's interacting, but not in any mysterious way.
Right, right, yeah.
In order to make the measurement, you have to reflect something off of it. And when you're below a certain size, reflecting light off of it completely changes the configuration of the experiment. So at those levels, light matters.
Why is it a mystery then? Why is that the big experiment that they is it? Does it mean something? Because that's kind of what I thought.
No, the question is why when you shine light on it. So you have to ask, why would matter manifest as a wave or as a particle differently at all in a universe that makes sense?
Okay, that's what it
okay,
is.
Okay, right. But earlier I think I said the universe is under no obligation. I'm going to say it with my planetarium voice. the universe is under no obligation to make sense to you.
Absolutely. Your greatest gift, I think, and thank you for coming. I mean, I love talking to you, is you have a great ability to take complex thoughts and explain them in a very, very cohesive and easy to understand way. And that, a lot of guys can't do that.
Maybe it's because the thoughts are not complex to begin with.
You know what? I'm going to disagree. They're complex. Now, as we close, I'd like to try to get my guest to help me with. I'm not going.
Oh, we got
to
plug my latest book. You can't come here and not plug my book.
We'll plug it in the.
Okay.
We're going to plug it in the okay, description.
I'll set you up for that. Okay.
What's the name?
Hang on. I'll set you up for that. So, Jim, you didn't mention my book.
I am a terrible host. What is the name of your book, Neil?
Merlin's Tour of the Universe.
And where can people get that?
At bookstores near you or just online, obviously. Yeah. Or if you get it from my museum's web portal, then all the books that they sell, I've pre-signed.
Now,
fancy pen.
You're seeing this. This is the end of the podcast, but I'm actually putting this part in the beginning. So now watch the podcast, because I forgot to mention the book. Why? Because I'm stupid.
It's a Q&A book on the universe, which fulfills the whole point of why we got together today.
Yes.
To just satisfy the curiosities that lurk within us all.
Get Neil deGrasse Tyson's book. I will put that before the podcast.
You got it.
And we need a catchphrase. I don't have a catchphrase for this podcast. If you can think of one, it would be helpful.
Think of one for you?
If you can.
Hold on. I like words. Me and words go way back.
Sure do.
So give me five people you've interviewed.
For this podcast, I would say Chaz Palminteri, Tim Dillon, Nick Mullen, yourself, and who else is a good one? Colin Quinn. No, I said good one. Colin Quinn.
I'm thinking of Jim's whims. Because it's what you interview whatever the hell you want to interview about whatever your thoughts are.
That is true. That is true.
Jim's whims. It's a little wonky, but.
That's it. Jim's whims.
No.
Thank you. No, that's
it. Needs more teeth.
You need more teeth?
They need more teeth.
Ah, then Jim's whims?
Yeah, Jim.
I've actually been told to use less teeth by my wife.
And not your girlfriend, your ex-girlfriend, who she's comparing notes with.
Didn't matter with her.
That's why you crossed over into the... Okay.
Thank you so much for calling my show. The episode's over, it's time to go. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. I hope everything works out. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. Don't blame me when it doesn't work out. Good luck, stupid, good luck, stupid. Don't blame me when it doesn't work out.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.